Turn it up.
Morning, you guys. I'm Jackson. Welcome back to Good Old Days. This is our fifth show here on radio.dominican.edu. And so far, we've been listening to lots of classic country and a whole lot of Southern rock. And at the end of each show, we have heard a song that's been more recent in the music world. We heard mainstream country for the first few shows. And just last week, the last song was one that incorporated more rock and then more blues. So this Monday, we are starting it off with some Southern rock, and then we'll be moving right along to two traditional country singers. And then our fourth and final song will be another different one. This show, it will be some bluegrass, so stay tuned for that one. And now we'll get right into our show. So let's go ahead and kick it off with our rock song. This is the Marshall Tucker Band with their hit song, Can't You See?
Jump off, nobody gonna know. Can't you see? Oh, can't you see what that woman, Lord, she been doing to me? Can't you see? Can't you see what that woman, she been doing to me? I'm gonna buy a ticket. Never coming back.
we are back. That was Can't You See by the Marshall Tucker Band. All right, these guys were huge. They were one of the major Southern rock bands of the 1970s. So these guys, they applied rock and they applied country to their music, but they also combined that with some jazz. And I'm definitely not the biggest jazz fan, but I do dig this band. I like how they work in little parts of that genre. And I mean, even I admit that I think it does add something different to their music. So I actually quite like it now that I've gotten used to the jazz and their music. So the Marshall Tucker Band was formed in Spartanburg in South Carolina. And some usually think that their name was based off of someone whose name was, in fact, Marshall Tucker, when it was actually unintentionally named after a Spartanburg piano tuner. So before the band took off, one night they were just hanging out at an old warehouse, and they were using that place for the rehearsals and just running out that area. And that evening, they were brainstorming some band names, and then one of them noticed, and they pointed out that the warehouse door key that they had, it said Marshall Tucker. It had it inscribed on it, so they got the idea to just call themselves the Marshall Tucker Band, and they didn't even know that it was an actual person at the time. So after they made the title official, they discovered that Marshall Tucker was a piano tuner in the Spartanburg, South Carolina area, and he was renting out that warehouse before they did. So it was his name that was on the key. So they kept it. I like the fact that it was such a random idea that got even more random when they figured out who Marshall Tucker really was, but they just ran with it and they kept it. So after the name was decided, it was 1971, and Doug Gray, Toy, and his brother Tommy Caldwell, George McCorkle, Paul Riddle, and Jerry Eubanks, they made up the Marshall Tucker Band. So this group was six guys, and they had Gray as their lead singer. Caldwell brothers were on guitar and bass. Ball was the drummer, and Eubanks was their reed player. And you could really hear him in Can't You See. You can really, the reed player is very easy to hear in a lot of their songs. It's not like it's hidden or anything. So the original band was signed to Capricorn Records, where they released their first album. It was self-titled. It was called The Marshall Tucker Band. And during that decade, most of the group's albums, they went gold, and their album called Carolina Dreams topped it off when it sold 1 million and brought their top 15 single. It was called Heard It in a Love Song in 1977. And then in the 1980s, that's when the Marshall Tucker Band started to change and really, really shift. So, I mean, and when I say that, it's not in the best, it's not a good shift. You'll see why I say that in a second. Bassist Tommy Caldwell, he died from a car accident. And after that tragedy, the Marshall Tucker Band started to lose their footing on the album charts. And then following his brother's death, Toy Caldwell went after a solo career, and in 1983, the band officially separated. So that same year, Jerry Eubanks and Doug Gray, they found some studio musicians from Nashville, and they got the band back on the road, and about a year later, they established the new lineup for the Marshall Tucker Band. And that was, it started with Gray and Eubanks, and they came back to Spartanburg, and then they hired guitarist Stuart Swanland and Rusty Milner, bassist Tim Lauder, and drummer Ace Allen. And the band was on a roll, you know, once again, and eventually they ran into another tragedy when one of the founding members, this time the other Caldwell brother, Toy, he passed away in 1993. So throughout that time, more band members came in, some left, some stayed with the Marshall Tucker. And in a way, I feel like this group's endurance, it really does remind me of Lynyrd Skynyrd's endurance, just because of them kind of losing members. And then they just kept the band going. They didn't really let it die after that. They kept it, you know, kept making music. And because of its many members, they also remind me of the Ozark Mountain Daredevils. We listened to them just last week, because the Marshall Tucker Band, the Ozark Mountain Devil, has had so many members, and same really with the Marshall Tucker Band. Now I think they've had something like 25 past members altogether. So as for the band's current lineup, we have an original founder. Doug Gray is still in the group. He is the lead vocalist. Then there's Marcus James Henderson. He plays the flutes and the keyboard. Rick Willis is their guitarist, and their bassist is Pat Elwood. And the completing member is B.B. Borden, and he plays the drums. So quick side note, you guys probably know this band. I just wanted to add this in here. They are very recent. They're a really popular duo. I only like a few of their songs, to be honest with you. But they're called the Florida Georgia Line. And in their well-known song, Cruise, they actually mention the Marshall Tucker Band. So I just wanted to have a short listen.
She was sipping on Southern and singing Marshall Tucker. We were falling in love in the sweetheart of summer. She had to ride.
There we go. I don't know if you guys were able to catch that. They said she was sipping on Southern and singing Marshall Tucker. So there it is, a band from the 21st century that's making a reference to a band from the 1970s. So it does still show. I like hearing, you know, the older artists mentioned in newer songs just because it shows that the more current artists and their roots, I mean, they still have their roots because most of these modern country singers like the Florida Georgia Line, and then going to past shows even. So we had Florida Georgia Line, we had Cadillac 3 and the Zac Brown Band. I think they were all influenced by the artists in that decade, and they grew up listening to these groups, and it really did impact their own musical style. So I think that's pretty darn cool. So that is the Marshall Tucker Band. They really do have a different sound than the other bands we've heard so far. Going back just to Lynyrd Skynyrd and Molly Hatchet and ZZ Top and even the Kentucky Headhunters, really, they were all groups that originated from the South. They have that in common with the Marshall Tucker Band. But even though those bands have a variety of style and different music, they definitely didn't have any jazz. I don't think I've ever heard any songs of those, you know, from those bands have a jazzy feel like this group, because the Marshall Tucker Band really, really incorporates it. I want to say in almost every other song, they have that jazz kind of into it. So, I mean, it's not really as present in Can't You See a little bit at some points, but I mean, it's still there, just not as big when you compare it to more songs from them. For example, let me give you guys some different, because they have like a jazzy feel and then they have a rock feel, and that's why all of their songs, like, some will be a lot of jazz and then some will be a lot of rock and then some will be half and half. So in their song, there's Silverado, there's Desert Skies, there's In My Own Way, This Time I Believe, you hear more of that jazz combination in those ones. And then you have songs like Fire on the Mountain and Ride in Peace, they have it too, and they kind of make me feel, though, like I'm in Hawaii in some parts of those tunes. Like, in the very beginning, they have kind of your typical, I don't know, it just, like, it sets the mood and it makes me feel like I'm on a beach somewhere. And then it gets into a little bit of jazz and rock, but it has that Hawaiian music to it. At least I feel like it is. I could be way off, though. But then you have songs like Blue Ridge Mountain, Long Hard Drive, Take the Highway. They have a more similar sound to Lynyrd Skynyrd in those songs. And you can really hear the reeds, by the way, in Take the Highway. It works so well with the rest of the instruments. And actually, you know what? Take the Highway, it has a Skynyrd feel, like I said, but it also has some jazz in certain parts. So that one's a bit of a mix of everything. Lots of genres in that one song. So those hits that I just listed, they are some of my favorites. So if you feel like you might like the Marshall Tucker Band, those songs are really good ones to start out with. And that is our Southern Rock segment for today. So now we are going to begin with our Old Country sections. This first artist is our very first female classic country. Well, actually, it's our first female singer in each genre we've had so far. It's the first female for the whole show. And I actually noticed not too long ago that the ratio of guy singers to female artists in my iTunes is so unequal. It's actually kind of like, I wonder if that's normal. It has to be like 4% is women and the other 96% are guys. And my music is just dominated by the dudes. And I honestly have no idea why. I have only maybe like a handful of songs by females altogether. I maybe have no more than 10 songs by the female singers, but I feel like that says something because I don't really have music that I don't listen to on my iPhone and stuff. Like, you know how you have those people, I still don't know how much capacity iPhones and stuff have music wise, but I remember like the older iPods, they used to have like this crazy amount of gigabytes on them and you could put like something like 8,000 songs or whatever. And I never understood how people actually fill it up because I feel like I have maybe like 500, barely even 500, and I don't even listen to them every day. So I feel like if I don't listen to a certain song all that often, I'll just take it off because it's like, well, I'm not going to listen to you, so why do you need to be on my iPhone? So if I don't listen to it, it just gets deleted. And that being said, majority of the female songs are from old country women, and there's only, I think there's only two, I'm not even kidding, as of now there's only two modern songs by women. That's it. I think I have only one song by Miranda Lambert, and the other I'm pretty sure is by a band called Honey Honey. I don't know, it's a band but the girls sing, so I don't even know if that really counts as a female singer, if you know what I mean. But and then the rest are all either bluegrass or classic country by females. So I'm just gonna go ahead and introduce our next pick of the show. This woman really does rule over my music compared to the other ones, and I love her music. And even though I don't know her, so this is gonna sound kind of pathetic, but whatever, just by hearing her songs and seeing her performances and interviews and all that, I genuinely feel like she's just so modest and she's so humble, and she always comes off as like the nicest and sweetest person ever. And not to mention that now I believe she's 68 years old and she still looks amazing. And if I have half that woman's genes when I get older, oh lordy, I'll be happy. Even though she has enhanced her looks a little, but she admits it, and I still love her. And I mean, why not? She can afford it, and she didn't go too crazy or overboard like some people. So without further ado, here we go with the hit song Jolene by the fabulous Dolly Parton.
Jolene, 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 I'm begging of you, please don't take my man. Jolene, 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 please don't take him just because you can. Your beauty is beyond compare, with flaming locks of auburn hair, with ivory skin and eyes of emerald green. Your smile is like a breath of spring, your voice is soft like summer rain, and I cannot compete with you, Jolene. He talks about you in his sleep, and there's nothing I can do to keep from crying when he calls your name, Jolene. And I can easily understand how you could easily take my man, but you don't know what he means to me, Jolene. Jolene, 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 I'm begging of you, please don't take my man. Jolene, 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 just because you can. You could have your choice of men, but I could never love again. He's the only one for me, Jolene. I had to have this talk with you. My happiness depends on you, and whatever you decide to do, Jolene. Jolene, 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 I'm begging of you, please don't take my man. Jolene, 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 please don't take him even though you can.
We Are Back. That was Jolene by the fabulous Dolly Parton. And before we get into the biography, I actually wanted to share some interesting facts about Dolly. She comes from a very big family. She is the fourth out of 12 children. In 1996, she had the world's first cloned mammal named after her. It was a sheep called Dolly Parton. And she is the godmother of Miley Cyrus. She also made guest appearances on the Hannah Montana show. Her character's name in that was Aunt Dolly. I actually used to watch that show when there was nothing else on. And like, I hate to admit it to some people because it'll always, I don't know, somehow it comes up in more conversations than I think. And people be like, did you ever watch that show? It seems so stupid. I'm like, yeah, I did. I think I actually even bought one episode on iTunes. Oh, dear God. Okay, anyways, one time she lost a Dolly Parton lookalike contest. She got beat out by somebody else. And when she used to go out in public, she would try and disguise herself. And despite different makeup, different clothes, and a wig, I think she even would wear like a short black wig out. She said her voice would always give her away. It would always be the factor that ended up ruining the whole disguise. She is also the owner of a theme park called Dollywood in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. It opened in 1986 and is actually still running. And according to Dolly, she has written about 5,000 songs since she was 7, with her first song being about her corncob doll. And because she didn't know how to write yet, because she was so young, her mom actually wrote down the lyrics for her. She has her own line of wigs. She actually brought one of her wigs onto the Jimmy Fallon show, and Jimmy put it on, and he looked like an old school rocker, and she told him he looked like Paula Deen or something. It was a good interview, though. It was funny. Who doesn't like Jimmy Fallon, right? And Dolly Parton. So let's talk about the life of Dolly Parton now. She was born in Sevier County in 1946, and her 11 siblings grew up in the backwoods of Tennessee's Great Smoky Mountains. Dolly came from a very poor family, saying that the only running water they had was when they actually would have to run to get it, and because they didn't have any electricity, she and her brothers and sisters, they would run out and catch fireflies if they were outside, and they would actually put them all in a mason jar and they'd bring them into their bedrooms, and that was their source of light. So money was very tight for the Partons, and Dolly took that and those experiences and lessons, and she later applied them and she used them in her music career. Like I think two of her songs you can really tell that, like, see her childhood. It was Coat of Many Colors and My Tennessee Mountain Home. Really great songs where she just shared, I think, her experiences growing up. So as a child, Dolly first started performing in church, and eventually she began singing on local radio and TV programs in the Eastern Tennessee area. And after several appearances on television and the radio, 13-year-old Parton made her recording debut with a small Louisiana label, and by that time she already knew that she wanted a career in country music. She was really headstrong about it, but she held it off until she graduated high school. So right when high school was finished, she went straight to Nashville immediately, and she was ready to officially start her country career. Soon after she got to Nashville, Tennessee, she met her husband of nearly 50 years. I think they've been married for like 48 or something. And then during that time, she was writing some songs for other artists, having some of those songs become hits. So then in the mid-1960s, Dolly Parton signed on to Monument Records. And although she was brought in as a pop singer, it only led to one pop chart single, and she wanted to sing country, but Monument actually thought that her voice was better suited for the pop genre and, you know, just not country, simply put. So in 1967, her country career finally took off when she made a partnership. She became a duo with Porter Wagoner, and the two partnered up on the Porter Wagoner Show, and they produced several hits together. And Dolly's work with Wagoner actually landed her a contract with RCA Records. And in 1971, her first country hit came along. That song was the song Joshua. And then two more huge hits followed a year later. I Will Always Love You. And then this song, Jolene. And I feel like Jolene, I mean, who can't relate to Jolene. I know I can because I've met a lot of Jolene's in my life, and I'm always Dolly Parton, not singing, but more like crying, like, oh yeah, please don't take him away from me. But, and I think guys probably could relate to it too. I'm sure there's a male version of Jolene out there. Got a lot of heartbreakers here. So I think those songs are definitely her signature songs. I know even people who don't really listen to Dolly Parton, whenever they hear either Jolene or I Will Always Love You, at least I have noticed this, whenever those two songs come out, they're always like, oh, Dolly Parton. I'm like, yeah, see, so you do know at least two of her songs. So with the success of those songs, Dolly Parton won the Country Music Award for the Female Vocalist 2 years in a row. She won in 1975 and then again in 1976. And that next year, Parton released Here You Come Again, and that one got to the top of the country charts and also the pop charts. So it won her a Grammy Award, her first Grammy, for her performance of this song. And then over the years, Parton had tons of collaborations. She recorded Grammy Award winning albums. The ones I'm thinking of are Trio and then The Grass is Blue from 1999. And I really like The Grass is Blue because it's a lot of bluegrass, and it included another female artist that I'll listen to, Alison Krauss. She's one of the few that's on my iPod. And by the way, if we have any bluegrass fans listening, I really, really encourage you to check out Alison Krauss and Union Station together. I can be pretty picky when it comes to my bluegrass, but I really like her with this group. I think they make an excellent combination. So since 2000, Dolly Parton has continued to receive plenty of recognition. She was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame in 2000, and she was one of five artists that were honored at the Kennedy Center Honors. So then she got another Academy Award nomination for a song. This was the second nomination from a soundtrack, because she was also nominated for 9 to 5's music. That was a movie that she acted in, and she did some production for its soundtrack. So she's multi-talented. She's an actress and she's a great singer. And in more recent news, she released her 2008 album called Backwoods Barbie, and that brought two more country hits. One was Jesus and Gravity, and the other was Better Get to Livin'. Then about 3 years ago, she had Better Day, and that did pretty well on the country album charts. And then in 2012, I believe she published another book. So let's add that to the list of her talents. She's also a writer. This one was titled Dream More, Celebrate the Dreamer and You. She was also the author of Dolly, My Life and Other Unfinished Business, which was released almost 10 years ago. We'll round up. So besides, you know, book writing and singing and songwriting, she also made a bit of a movie career on top of that. So she starred in a few hit films. They were, at least the ones I'm thinking of, were 9 to 5. That's the one that she sang on the soundtrack for. And she was also in Steel Magnolias. And I love Steel Magnolias. I wasn't even born when the movie first came out. It was like made 25 years ago. So I saw that movie when I was just a little girl. I saw the original, though. Apparently they made a remake, but we don't mess with a remake. I'm going to stick with the first one. So Dolly Parton played the role of Truvy Jones in that film. She owned a place called Truvy's Beauty Parlor in Louisiana, and it's the story of a close-knit circle of friends seeing their connections and their relationships. It's such a chick flick, but I love it. It has like Sally Field and Julia Roberts. It's such a classic. And the other characters in it, I love Dolly, but I also love Miss Weezer. And then what's his name? He was Sally Field's husband, Drum Edenton, something like that. They crack me up. I feel like I'm going to be like Weezer when I'm an old lady. She's hilarious because she's like the perfect little mixture of being really, really grumpy and just like hates everyone, but to the point where it's funny for everyone else. So I guess it's a good thing. I mean, I don't know. I feel like I'm going to be like that. And then there's Owen Jenkins in that film. He like ends up, I'm going to totally spoil this a little bit, but I think him and Miss Weezer end up together. And I don't even know what his real name is, but Owen Jenkins is the cutest old man I've ever seen. Almost as awesome as the old guy from the Six Flags commercials. Do you guys remember that? The guy who would just come and dance. I don't even know if they air those commercials anymore, but I really hope they keep doing it. They were good. So Dolly was also in the second Miss Congeniality for like 5 seconds. Well, more like 30 if you want to count Sandra Bullock chasing her through Las Vegas and then bringing her down with a pretty sweet football tackle. So she also made a brief appearance in that movie. And that wraps up Dolly Parton for this week. So she's a great artist, such a beautiful voice. She is one of the only artists that I won't sing along with. And you guys, I love singing. I suck at singing, but I really try to refrain myself from singing along with Dolly Parton because I know my voice will ruin the songs and it'll probably make me more depressed hearing my voice compared to hers. So I just shut up and let Dolly Parton do all the singing. All right, now we are going to have a quick break with a quick word from Bosco. So stay tuned, folks.
This is DJ Bosco with another Bosco break. If you like shopping online, you'll be used to the endless stream of disappointing deals and sales pushed in front of you by retailers every day. They just never quite turn out to be the bargains they claim to be. Very few outlets offer extremely low prices on premium products, and even few make the experience of purchasing them fun and entertaining. But there are still some amazingly good deals to find out there that'll save you heaps of money. But they only exist on a handful of websites. One such retailer is a new online auction website called Quibids, who have worked out a way to sell you must-have products at prices that are so low you won't believe your eyes. Their product range is extensive and includes some of the most sought-after consumer items available. Examples are Apple devices, iPads, iPhones, and MacBooks, to HD televisions, Nikon cameras, and even jewelry and gift cards to premium retailers. To understand how this works, you first need to know what an entertainment auction is. This auction model is different to traditional online auction formats such as eBay. Every time a bid is placed, a charge of a few cents is made to their customers. Added up, these small individual charges amount to quite a lot. This enables them to sell an item that costs hundreds or even thousands of dollars for no more than 30 or 40 bucks. Simply put, the retail prices they charge are by far the lowest available online. Every time a customer bids, the auction is extended by no more than 20 seconds, and the last person who placed a bid when the clock time reaches zero receives the right to purchase the item at the discounted price. While you get a big buzz from winning an auction, strategizing over when to bid and how many bids to place is also huge fun. CEO Matt Beckman said that they are growing incredibly fast and that their numbers of customers now reaches into the millions. This is a new type of shopping that appeals to a mass audience. Consumers expect more when they shop these days, and Quibids offers that, he said. For an auction winner, the true cost of the item purchased is slightly higher than the final price the auction ended with, because the auction winner would have spent a few dollars bidding several times in the auction. Typically, this amount is fairly modest, so when both elements are added up, customers on average save around 75 to 85% of cost. For those who participate in any auction and don't win, they're able to use a buy now feature to purchase the product at a discounted rate, which is the listed price minus the value of the bids they have placed. This basically means the auctions are a no-loss proposition, which is pretty amazing. So if you're looking to save up to 90% on items such as brand new iPads for $32, a Samsung HD TV for $37, or a Canon Rebel T3i camera bundle for $27, check out Quibids today. That's the end of your Bosco break. Back to the show. When you see me
And we are back to good old days here on Penguin Radio. So let's keep it moving to our next country artist for this show. And now I've been waiting for this since the first show for this moment. You guys will probably notice this, but I mean, all the people I've played so far have been people I actually, you know, I really love. I love their music. I love everything. So, but the thing was that I was really trying not to just throw all my favorite artists like in the first few shows and be like, oh, so I've been trying to like spread them out a little bit. So I'm so excited for this because it is now time for Mr. Johnny Cash. And this man is by far one of my favorite singers. He's like probably number one of all time. He's been my favorite for forever. And my dad listened to Cash, so it was just passed down to me, and then I started listening to him and I pretty much fell in love. So finally here is Johnny Cash with God's Gonna Cut You Down. That was so here we go. Let's go ahead and play this song, one of my favorites. It's a little bit haunting and kind of gives you that, I don't know, that like eerie feeling, but I really like it. Some people think I'm like, well, this isn't even a happy song. I'm like, well, I dig it. So here we go. God's Gonna Cut You Down by Johnny Cash.
You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Well, my goodness gracious, let me tell you the news. My head's been wet with the midnight dew. I've been down on bended knee, talking to the man from Galilee. He spoke to me with a voice so sweet, I thought I heard the shuffle of angels feet. He called my name and my heart stood still when he said, John, go do my will. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man, but as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
So there was God's Gonna Cut You Down by Johnny Cash. So yeah, like I said, it has a haunting feeling to it. I feel like it has a rough sound to it, but I absolutely love it. It brings a bit of grit, and that's why his music was just so different and so distinct. So this guy has had quite a life. 71 years is a lot to cover, especially because it's the legendary Johnny Cash, but I'm going to do my best and we'll start from the beginning and just go from there. So here we go, you guys. History time, my friends. So Johnny Cash was born on February 26th in 1932. He was born John R. Cash, JR, whatever you want to call him. And he was born in Kingsland, Arkansas. So his parents were Ray and Carrie Rivers, and he was one of seven children to the couple. In the 1930s, Ray Cash considered the current Roosevelt program from the Great Depression and then the New Deal at that time. So the family moved to Dyess Colony, more northeast in Arkansas, and they got a 20-acre farm there. They just had 20 acres of cotton and some seasonal crops. And with that land, John worked on the farm and the fields with his parents and the other kids. So as a child, J.R. was greatly affected by his older brother's death. It was 1944, and Jack, that's John's brother, he had a table saw accident. So the boys that day and their mother, they had a bit of a bad omen that morning. They all had just a bad feeling about it, and she wanted Jack to skip work and just avoid, you know, woodcutting at the mill. And she urged him to go fishing with J.R. instead. And even with the bad feelings and the warnings, it didn't stop Jack. He knew that the family needed the money, so he went on into work. And when he was at the mill, Jack was pulled into a spinning headsaw where he was almost cut in two. And after a week of hanging on, Jack died on May 20th in 1944 when he was only 15. So since then, Johnny Cash has frequently talked about the guilt that he had from his brother's death, and on his deathbed, Jack actually said that he had these perceptions and these visions of angels in heaven. And when he was older, Johnny expressed that he was looking forward to seeing Jack in heaven. So pretty rough, you know, event in his childhood. But going back music wise, since he was growing up, I think it was always present. You know, that music was going to be a huge part of his life, because when he was growing up in JR's house, I mean, music was a daily thing in his household. It was always being played and they were always hearing it. And I like to say that Johnny Cash was like a sponge with music, and he took in just everything around him, because he picked up on hymns and folk songs from his mother, and he soaked up songs from the fields, and he learned some music from the local railroad yards, and all these were his musical influences, and a lot of variety. And in his early life in Arkansas, and a lot of the times, I mean, I think you can really, really hear that in his songs. And he really does reflect on how he grew up and what he experienced in his earlier days in his career. So Cash stayed in Dyess Colony for the rest of his childhood up until 1950, when he graduated high school. And after that, he went to Detroit looking for work. And he searched and he found a job finally in an automotive plant in Pontiac in Michigan. And Cash stayed there for only a short time, and then he decided to go ahead and enlist in the United States Air Force. He then went to Texas for basic training, and that's where he first met his first wife, Vivian Liberto. And after Texas, he was sent to Landsberg in Germany, and during his service, he formed his very first band. They called themselves the Landsberg Barbarians. And later on in 1954, Johnny Cash was discharged and he came back to the States, where he ended up marrying Miss Liberto. So the newlyweds settled down in Memphis, and Cash was able to find work. He held down several jobs, and, you know, meanwhile, he was still trying to step into the music business. That year, he went in as a solo artist for Sam Phillips's Sun Records, and he auditioned in hopes of recording gospel music specifically for the label, but Sam Phillips shut that idea down. And a little after that, Johnny was back in the recording studio, so he didn't give up, and he brought in his band at that time. They were the Tennessee Three. It was with him, guitarist Luther Perkins, bassist Marshall Grant, and pedal steel player Reed Kernodle. But he bailed on that studio session, so we'll forget about Red for now. In that recording time, they produced Hey Porter, which had strong instrumentals, and it was a really good single, but it flopped and didn't reach the charts. So Johnny Cash followed that with his song, Cry, Cry, Cry. Man, I love that song. I was originally going to play that song, but then God's Gonna Cut You Down One. What are you gonna do? Two Johnny Cash songs were battling it out. Anyways, back to Cry, Cry, Cry. It gained a spot, gained number 14 on the Billboard's top 20. So that song broke the barrier, and it finally put Cash officially into the music world. So after that success, his other singles also got onto the chart. It was So Doggone Lonesome, and that made it into the top 10. And by this time, he was already making a name for himself, and that led into his fourth chart single, I Walk the Line. And that song bumped him all the way to the top. It hit the Billboard's number one spot, and it didn't budge from that position for like 43 weeks. That's almost 11 months. Well, it's 10.75 months to be exact, because I did the math. On top of I Walk the Line holding the number one spot for a while, it actually sold more than 2 million copies. And this song is my dad's favorite, and he picked a mighty successful song. I get very surprised sometimes, actually, when people don't recognize this tune just because of its popularity and because of its musical success. So I don't know. I think that's sometimes weird a little bit, that I'll play it and people will be like, I have no idea what it is. I'm like, oh my God, kill me. You should be ashamed of yourselves. But then again, they can say the same thing for me when they show me songs that have been played on the radio now and that are currently coming out. I have no idea what those are. So I guess we're about even. So later in the 1950s, Johnny Cash was given an invitation to perform on the Grand Ole Opry. And we'll be hearing a lot more of the Grand Ole Opry in future shows, since it is known for being the show that made country music famous. So we'll be hearing more about that later on. And this went into the mid-1950s, and Cash was playing songs that were consistent hits with about 200 dates a year. And he switched and signed to Columbia Records, and he really wanted more freedom with his music. He was searching for this, in a record label because he still wanted to create some gospel music, and he thought that possibility would be more realistic through another label. So with that and into the 1960s, he kept on making awesome music and releasing some fantastic songs. There was Don't Take Your Guns to Town, which I recently heard actually in two movies, and I started like freaking out right when I heard him. One was a Robert De Niro and a John Travolta movie called Killing Season, and Travolta played a guy named, dear God, what was his name? It was like some super Russian sounding, I think his name was like Emil Kovac or something. He had a Russian accent in that film, and I couldn't make up my mind on if I liked it or not, and I still have the voice from Saturday Night Fever and Staying Alive just like imprinted in my mind. So even when he talks normally, I'm like, oh my God, it just sounds so weird. So he'll always be Tony Manero to me, and he'll always have that little Jersey New York accent. So hearing him with a Russian one was just like, what the? That's weird. The other movie was The Rundown with The Rock. So if there's a Johnny Cash song and The Rock in a film, I'm sold. Pretty awesome combination because I love Johnny Cash. And The Rock just seems super cool. He scares me, though. I'm kind of scared of Dwayne Johnson, but he still seems cool. So both of those movies were on Netflix not too long ago. Maybe they're still on there. They were good. I mean, lately it's been happening a lot. Usually I've been like, I'm always the type of person who's like, no, like, don't talk during the movie. Like, if we're watching a movie, we're going to concentrate on it, and we're going to pick out every little detail and really, really like watch it with our eyes glued to the screen. And lately I've been the exact opposite. I've been having major ADD when I'm watching movies. So as far as I can tell, since I saw these recently, when I was paying attention, they seemed like they were good movies, and they had good soundtracks because of Don't Take Your Guns to Town. So I was pretty happy with them. So besides Don't Take Your Guns to Town, he also produced I Got Stripes and the fantastic song Ring of Fire, which is another one of my favorites. Pretty much every song I've mentioned so far, just so you guys know, it is one of my favorites. So that means that all Johnny Cash songs are my favorites. And when I play this song, though, specifically, nobody recognizes it. And it's like, because my best friend since first grade thought that every time I play this song, she thinks it's Spanish music, because I get it. Like, in the beginning, it does have more of a Spanish type of feel. And then I still don't really get it, though. Even though I say I get it, I'm still like, what? And then I played it during my speech class at my old college. My teacher would make us do this thing where we would pick like theme songs for our speeches, because we gave, I think, like 3 or 4 big ones throughout the semester. So she was like, pick a theme song. You can pick a different theme song every time, so that when you walk up to the podium and you're getting ready to give your speech, like, you can get pumped up by your music. So I was like, okay, sweet. So I think one time I did like an AC/DC song. I did Back in Black because it made me feel like Iron Man. And then I did Elvis, and then I did Johnny Cash. And when I played Ring of Fire, the whole class just gave me really weird looks. So I was like, oh, I was kind of hoping that someone would actually know what this song was. So sometimes that song isn't as popular as I think, but then again, it's just probably the wrong crowd. I'm going to keep telling myself it's the wrong crowd. And then he had Understand Your Man and the Ballad of Ira Hayes, and those songs all had success with the record charts. And all that brought him plenty of appearances on The Tonight Show, on The Ed Sullivan Show, and even more network programs. And then he had a couple concept albums. There was Bitter Tears and Ballads of the True West, and that brought him some popularity with the folk lovers, and that brought him yet another appearance in the Newport Folk Festival. So even with these incredible accomplishments, it was not resulting too well for Johnny Cash. And that is where we are ending it with Johnny Cash for today. I chose like the worst part to end it just because it was like so sudden. But we're going to be hearing plenty more of him very soon, and we will pick up where we left off. So just remember that. I tried to end it on like a little climax, like, oh, now you're going to have to tune in next show to find out what happens. Or you could just go ahead and Google it, but please just tune in next show. It'll be easier. I'll give a good like story feel to it. So in the coming weeks and in the future shows, I'll refresh your memory a bit, and then we will continue with Johnny Cash's story. So now for a more modern song. Last week was blues, and this week it's some bluegrass. So this band has been established since the year 2000, and they recently performed a song called Atlantic City. So let's go ahead and check it out. I have the live version, so you guys might find it annoying. Sometimes I actually find a lot of live versions annoying just because it's everyone like clapping and it's like, shut up so I can please hear the music. But I don't know, this particular song, it sets the mood for me and it makes me feel like I'm at a bluegrass concert. I don't know if that's how you guys are going to feel, but that's what happens to me. So without further ado, here is Atlantic City, performed by a classic five-man string band without a drummer. They're called Green Sky Bluegrass. Atlantic City by Green Sky Bluegrass. So this was a more recent band for me. And a while back, actually, me and my family and I, we went over to another family's house. And my mother and I, or my brother and I, not my mother, because that would just be weird. My brother and I grew up with their kids, and we were friends with their sons all through high school. And they had a huge get together at their new place. So we went there and we barbecued and had a little bonfire thing going on. And we had Pandora on, and this band came on the channel, and I kind of liked it. So before the song finished, I like sprinted over to the speakers and I grabbed the phone before the dude could change the channel. And I was like, no, wait, like I want to see who it is. And it was Green Sky Bluegrass. And that night I heard more of their songs on Pandora. And now I listen to them pretty often. So the song that I played for you guys is actually one of my favorite songs that they did. Although it was not one of their songs, they did a cover of it. Atlantic City was originally a song by Bruce Springsteen, and that was on his album from 1982 called Nebraska. And as the original singer and songwriter, he wanted to depict a young couple's escape and their getaway to Atlantic City, which, by the way, is in New Jersey. And the song also connects to the fate of the man in the couple because he is planning to take a job in the organized crime world, you know, the mafia and that life. Thank God, Father. And Green Sky Bluegrass, they didn't change any of the lyrics. So in the beginning of Atlantic City, Bruce Springsteen opened up with, and so did Green Sky Bluegrass. They said, well, they blew up the Chicken Man in Philly last night. Now they blew up his house too. And that specific line actually referred to the mafia violence that was taking place in Philadelphia. You get it, Philly, Philadelphia. And the Chicken Man was Philip Testa. He was a mafia boss that was killed when a bomb was planted in his house in Philly in 1981. And the song tied in with Atlantic City's gambling, I mean, with that, and it related it to the young man's uneasiness about taking the job involved with all the crimes. So this song actually had some kind of meaning, I mean, like history-wise, and it actually did connect to something. So this song was covered by so many other bands, not just Green Sky Bluegrass. Shelton Hank Williams did one. Well, he's better known, too. He's better known as Hank Williams III. He's the grandson of Hank Williams Sr., and he's the son of Hank Williams Jr., so he did a cover of Springsteen's song. Eddie Vedder did a cover, Mumford & Sons did a cover, and Ed Sheeran, and almost 30 more covers of Atlantic City. So this was a very popular song for people to redo. So a bunch of other versions, but this bluegrass one, I think, is a really, really good one. So this group originated in, I can't speak at all today. I'm like trying to smile and like stretch my face out. So I feel like the words will come out easier, but I don't really think my face is even awake yet, but we're just going to try to pronounce this. Here we go. So they originated in Kalamazoo, Michigan with 5 members, and their current lineup is now Dave Bruza, Paul Hoffman, Michael Bont, Anders Beck, and Mike DeVol. So Anders Beck plays the dobro and Michael Bont is banjo. Then we have Dave Bruza, who's on guitar. Mike DeVol is bass, the upright bass, the one that's huge and stands up and it looks like an oversized violin. And then Paul Hoffman plays the mandolin. So Green Sky Bluegrass has all your typical bluegrass instruments. And here's some fun facts of the band. Dave Bruza has a dog named Beans. And Anders enjoys backcountry skiing in his free time, and he is actually writing a book. It will be his first novel. Mike DeVol first started off as a classic cellist, so I feel like that's a long way from what he's doing now. And when he's not performing, he likes doing crossword puzzles and riding his bike, and he really likes avocados, and that's a healthy food. That's a really good favorite food to have. Good for him, because my favorite food is probably most likely going to kill me. It's definitely going to be the cause of my death. And Mike Bont and Dave Bruza and Hoffman, they were the founding members of Green Sky Bluegrass. And then Mike Bont, the banjo guy, he builds banjos and he works on the inlays for Robinson guitars as well as plays the banjos. And Bont also has the nickname of Captain Fun. And the other band members call him this because he supposedly has some pretty sweet late night dance moves, saying that they rarely see them, but once they do see them, they'll never forget them. So I can't really tell if they're just more like, yeah, it's so memorable, or if they're actually scarred by them. It sounds a little bit like they're scarred for life. And he is also the master of karaoke, apparently, according to the rest of his band members. And then there's Paul Hoffman. At first, he played guitar before the mandolin. And he grew up around Lake Michigan, so his favorite surroundings are the Great Lakes and anything with sea or rivers or, I guess, really large parts of water. And these guys, they do play in tons of shows. They perform in a lot of rock clubs and festivals. There was Telluride in Colorado. There was Austin City Limits and the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival. And with all these appearances, they became pretty popular, but they're still more of an underground group. Like, they're well-known, but they keep their music pretty low-key, and they don't really put it out there when you compare it to other recent bands. So sometimes it's annoying, though, because I'll hear a song of theirs that they perform during a festival, and then I'll search on iTunes, and I'll look all over for it. I'll look everywhere, and it's impossible to find, so I just have to go around humming it in my head and be like, this is as close as it's going to get, I guess. So that's when I wish they weren't so underground, because then I wouldn't have to go on a treasure hunt each time I wanted a song of theirs. So what are you going to do? So Atlantic City was sung by Paul Hoffman with a lot of background vocals, mainly from Bruza, but DeVol and Beck and Bont, they joined in a bit and they do more vocals on other songs. But with my favorite songs from them, there's Demons and Windshield and Leap Year. They're sung by Hoffman, but then another Green Sky favorite of mine, the song is Worried About the Weather. That one is actually sung by Dave Bruza. So occasionally they will all sing, but I feel like Bruza and Hoffman usually take turns on the songs. They're the main ones. And that is Green Sky Bluegrass. I really recommend this group, especially two of their albums. Those are Handguns and then Five Interstates. Most of my favorite songs by these guys are from those albums. And that is our show number 5. We made it. So we got to listen to some Marshall Tucker, some Dolly Parton, some Johnny Cash, which we'll be hearing so much more of. You guys will probably be sick of Johnny Cash by the end of this, and I apologize. And then Green Sky Bluegrass. So once again, I'm Jax, and this is Good Old Days, the show for Southern rock and some country. So thank you for hanging out with me today, you guys, and I'll see you next Monday at 8 here on Penguin Radio.